It's time to catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign. And Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Featuring three floors of gently used books, greeting cards, journals, and more. Jane Addams Bookshop is at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign. Online at Jane Addams, that's A-D-D-A-M-S, books.com. As always on WEF, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEF Champaign, Prairie Art Inc., station management, the board of directors, or the WEF associates. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I'm pleased to welcome Urbana resident Frances Harris, who has longstanding roots in the community as a librarian, most known for her years at Uni High School, whose library is formerly a department of the Library of the University of Illinois. So you were engaged in research and writing beyond your work in the high school library. And while you were there, you wrote two editions of a book on a very compelling topic. I found it on the internet, Coming of Age Online, and that was the early days. So it would be very interesting to go look at that and see what you observed then. Your companion profession is violin, which you have studied all your life, beginning with classical and moving on to a calling in traditional and folk styles. And you are well known in town. You are out there a lot. You're known for playing with klezmer groups that are focused around Yiddish heritage, and you've expanded to enter the larger music scene in Champaign-Urbana, bluegrass and old time and kind of whatever's going on. And now you have a new resurgence with the occasional Cajun band, and where I've very much enjoyed seeing you play with the mariachi group, which is really gaining momentum around town, both the high school group and the adult group, which I think has some high school performers. And tying it all together is your longstanding involvement in the CU Folk and Roots Festival. So Frances, there is a lot to talk about. Would you mind going back to do a little of the early history before music? Would you give us a bit of background on your work as a librarian and how that has influenced your life in music?
Oh, sure. I also need to say that Uni High Library is still a departmental library of the university library. So whoever works in that library kind of has two bosses. It was a fantastic place to work because as a librarian, I could know every single kid, which doesn't always happen. And it's one of the reasons I stay on Facebook is because I'm still connected to some former students there. The library field is something that just does not stay still. And when I first started at Uni High, we booted up a dumb terminal every day with cassette tape.
Oh, yeah. And, I remember my early days, too.
Yeah. For me, technology was just a huge boon all the way along because it made what we did so much easier. Things like interlibrary loan. I remember the first time that the university library got a system in which people could request books from other departmental libraries, and the shipping guy would come every day with the requests, and it was like a miracle. Even though we had 12,000 books in the Uni High Library, they really had access to several million books. And it was also a nice place to work because I didn't have to worry about what a lot of librarians today really have to worry about, which is a lot of censorship. I mean, parents understood that their kids had access to all this information, and they trusted their kids and they trusted us to allow them that access. And then when the internet did come along, we were not required, like other schools are required, to have software filters that would limit what kids could get to. Most schools rely on E-rate funding to get their internet access. And our internet service provider was the university. That was just not an issue. Instead, what I did was focus huge amount of my time and a huge amount of my teaching on how to evaluate what they were finding online. And we used the term fake news long before anybody else used the term fake news. So my early years were all about searching. How do you find stuff? And then that evolved into, okay, now you can find stuff. How do you know what you have? How do you evaluate it? How do you become a good consumer of what you're finding? It was a great career, and I really miss the kids, and I miss that kind of helping and teaching profession, and yet not having lots of rules and lots of paperwork and bureaucracy around what I was doing, except for all the self-reporting that the university requires.
You said also that you got to do some work on ethnomusicology as part of the U of I library.
Now, as a musician, it's because I'm involved in heritage musics, a lot of things are being digitized. For example, there's an institution called the Klezmer Institute. Well, they host a project called the, okay, this is a mouthful, Kislav Makhnovetsky Digital Manuscript Project. Before COVID, a scholar from Japan, oddly enough, because this kind of work is done worldwide, was allowed to go into a library, an academic library in Ukraine, and take high-resolution images of working klezmorim, klezmer musicians' gig books. Basically, they would handwrite the songs that they were playing, usually in kind of a shorthand. She came out with all these high-resolution images, and then during COVID, it became this big crowdsourced digitization project where musicians were transcribing all those manuscripts into readable sheet music that is now available as PDFs. I don't have the skills to do that kind of transcription, and there were also a lot of languages involved because these musicians would write things in their home languages. So there's a lot of Yiddish, Russian, Ukrainian. Those are probably the primary languages. So there were all these little working groups all over the world transcribing and translating all this information. And they're making it into a big digital humanities project. My involvement is that every 2 weeks, a group of us meet on Zoom and play through these PDFs and talk about, do we know this tune? Because there's a lot of variations, a lot of versions of things. How was it used?
One thing I do want to ask you for is a thumbnail description of what klezmer music is.
I'm actually reading a history right now of the klezmer music in America. Nobody used that term until like the 1970s. It's like my grandmother who spoke Yiddish. Yiddish just means Jewish. I mean, to her, she just spoke Jewish. And to those musicians, they just played Jewish music. The big context of that is that it's music that comes from Jewish Eastern Europe. And the term itself, klezmer, is two Hebrew words, klei and zemer, which means instrument of song, vessel of song. And it actually means the musician. I am a klezmer. And the plural is klezmorim. Before the 1970s, and certainly in Europe, you did not want your daughter to marry a klezmer. They're like the lowlifes. There's another expression. A klezmer is a shikker. That means is a drunk. They were itinerant musicians who went from village to village. It was kind of a guild. It was a profession passed down within families. And it also covered this huge geographic area from Latvia and Lithuania all the way really down even to Turkey. Romania, Moldova, Bessarabia, Belarus, Russia, Poland, Ukraine. Therefore, within the genre, there are lots of styles and you'll find the same tune done different ways. So a lot of the music, probably about 75% of klezmer music, is what you would call functional, meaning it was for a wedding or it was for dancing or some sort of celebration. So there's a whole set of tunes that you would play to accompany the family to the wedding, a whole set of tunes you would play to accompany them home. Tunes for the walking up to the chuppah, the wedding canopy, and walking away from the chuppah. And so there's all these little subcategories within that. But the basic definition is that it's traditional Jewish music from Eastern Europe, primarily played for weddings and other types of events. They're definitely listening tunes, but even those listening tunes will have a role. The musicians, I believe for the most part, they could do lots of things. They didn't just do the folk music, which is why the classical training for me has been super handy, because it calls on a lot of those techniques. Most of those working musicians didn't just play for Jewish weddings. Old Europe had, there were a lot of rules. So there were rules around where Jews could and could not play. There were same thing for Roma, what we say gypsies, and other people. So what they tended to do was learn each other's repertoire and play in each other's, for each other's events. And so they would know this much bigger repertoire. And a lot of these gig books the musicians have include a lot of continental music, you know, mazurkas and waltzes and things you would need for other. So they were literate. They knew how to read music, which makes them a little different than a lot of other folk style musicians. And then in the background, the people at the Klezmer Institute are getting grant funding until they weren't, like everybody else, to do a lot of work with so that you could search this collection by really interesting things like intervals between notes, so that they could find similarities and comparisons both within this corpus of music and to other genres. So for example, we're finding, because the area was so large, similarities to Greek music or Turkish music. They're creating this database that's searchable that will connect all those threads. And that's the part that really appeals to me as a librarian. You can search it, you can manipulate it, you can use it how you want to use it. And then eventually librarians will be able to access this and plug it into whatever systems they're using. I kind of feel like it's all one big circle for me, and it's all connected.
Yeah. Let's move on to the music, because that's really the focus of how I know you in this community now. You perform in town in so many genres, and you were actually trained classically as a child, so you cross over everything. Tell us about your perspective on these.
I'm playing, I would say, in three genres now. The klezmer is definitely where my heart is and what I actually kind of know how to do. But I've been learning Cajun from my friend Rob Crum, and I've been to one Cajun camp and plan to go to another one. And klezmer and Cajun are a lot alike in their structure, in that it's a folk music. So you play a line and then you repeat it, A-A, and then you play, then you go to the B section, play the B section, repeat it. Then you go back to the top and play them over and over again, and you do it by ear. And so in that regard, they're very much alike. Cajun, I don't think I've ever seen anyone use sheet music there. The tunes are, I want to say simpler, but the style isn't necessarily simpler. And then there's mariachi. So if I'm going to compare these three, mariachi is much more like classical in that it is composed. The songs are written by human beings, and we generally know who they are. So that takes it out of the folk realm and into what I would call, what they all have in common is that they're heritage music. So they come from a people and a place. They have a culture around them. And so mariachi music comes from a specific area of Mexico. There are certain songs that are played for certain kinds of events and celebrations. And, you know, I made a real super rookie mistake when we're learning in the mariachi band. We're learning, and I hope none of my mariachi fellows listen to this to hear me confess this. Actually, they already know it. A song called El Pecador. And I said, well, this would be a good one to play at a wedding. And Giselle, our high school student, looked at me and said, why would you play at a wedding? I conflated pecador with pescador, which means fish. Pecador means sinner.
Oh, uh-huh.
So this was not a mistake I wanted to make. And you wouldn't believe.
Now, how did you get involved with the mariachi group?
That I attribute to the Folk and Roots Festival. When I was on the steering committee, and I've always been a volunteer there, Edgar Gutierrez, who's the leader of the mariachi, played for the festival with his Tejano band. And so I got to know him through that. And then one day he put on Facebook, it was like a little more than a year ago, it was like a year ago, October, he put, "I'm starting a mariachi band, I'm looking for violins and trumpets. Who's interested?" And how could I not do that? And yes, we have one super regular high school student who's in it, and who's also in the Tigres, the high school group, and we have a couple others who are moving in and come to the rehearsals and have played on a couple gigs as well. So that was also another long answer to your
Well, that's good because it's fascinating. I've enjoyed so much watching the high schoolers come into this band and just really give it their all and have the adults, the professional level musicians just out there singing their hearts out and playing. And I think it really gives the kids a great opportunity to
It
learn both music and about playing in a group.
Right. It's yeah, and presenting themselves, and it's hugely wonderful. I wish more than anything I'd had something like that myself when I was growing up, and for me to watch them play their heritage music. However, anybody can join that group, and there's plenty of kids in the Tigres who are not of Mexican heritage. So, and I think that's the other way we're going to save the world, is by sharing each other's cultures in this kind of intimate, visceral way, which is what I think music brings to you. The other thing I love seeing is the kids and the younger people and the adult mariachi band switch effortlessly between Spanish and English with no accent in either language. And this is something that Yiddish was my grandparents' native language. They spoke it to my parents, but there was just this long period of time, and where it evoked so much sadness because of the Holocaust, and so, and even the music as well. And it was kind of considered the language of oppression. So it was lost. It was really, really lost. And now there's this huge resurgence, bringing it back. There are lots and lots of people studying Yiddish. Let me tell you, it is really hard to do that when you're an adult. I thought it would be easier for me, and it just wasn't. I mean, there are a few things I can say. The language really informs the music, kind of the sounds of it. One thing I'll say about klezmer, I'll give you a story. The first time I went to festival, Klez Camp, in 2002, I came home very, very excited and called my mother and said, "I learned this thing, this sound you make that sounds like a sob or a cry," which is something you hear in cantorial music. And my mother interrupted me. She said, "Oh, a krex." She knew all about it. Krekhts, krekhts. And this is the signature sound of klezmer, where the violin, the instrumental music is meant to evoke the voice and the sound. So the sound of Yiddish and the sound of the cantor, the chazan, singing for services really, really informs that music. So I kind of feel like if I'm ever going to speak Yiddish, it's just going to be through my violin. And I can play that krechs like anybody's business. My classical background was very, very helpful in that regard. Because klezmer uses vibrato, it uses more flexibility. You play up and down the instrument more, and you need it for lots of different purposes. But it is, at its heart, a real folk tradition.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual experience of playing the violin. I'd love for you to talk to us about all the different ways you play and just what it's how it feels to play that instrument.
Oh gosh, it's just the best instrument. I imagine, I listened to your interview with Saul, and that's what he said about the clarinet. But you see it in so many different genres, but you could just really, really make it sing. And in Cajun, I feel like you make it get down and dirty. In mariachi, you're making it sing. It's just very, very versatile. You can play in any key. It's an instrument for the ages, and you see versions of it in every culture there is, besides classical. Yeah, as you mentioned, old time, bluegrass, both of which I do extremely marginally. Irish, Scottish, Celtic fiddle is just amazing. Those four strings just make magic. I mean, I don't know what else to say. And for me, a violin and an accordion, or a violin and the cymbal that Cody plays in our band, which is the hammered dulcimer, or a bass, for me, it's comfort food in the form of music.
And the groups that you play with, how did they come together? Because all these people are so well known from really playing in very different ways together.
I'm very, very lucky. So my klezmer band is called Papashoy, P-A-P-A-S-H-O-Y, which means corn in Yiddish. I wanted something that would evoke the Midwest and where we're from. So I actually went to some Yiddishists I know and I said, help me with this. That was the suggestion. I asked. I mean, Rob Crum is always up for anything. And he's wonderful. And this is way outside of his realm of experience. So we're trading off. I'm learning Cajun from him. He's learning klezmer from me. Cody Jensen and Charlie Harris are also up for anything. They are, you know, they used to be like the rhythm band section of every band in town. Now they're super busy with some other things. Charlie is the co-owner of the Rose Bowl. Cody is in grad school and he accompanies the dance department on campus. And so they are in a touring band, Chicago Farmer. So they don't have a lot of time, but they're really interested and really engaged when I bring it to them, and they listen to recordings I send them. And then Rob Swedler, who started up with accordion with our band. So I also feel really pleased about that. And he's taken that accordion with him into the hot club of Urbana where he plays jazz. You can also see him in many things around town. So I feel extraordinarily lucky to have, I mean, they are such pros, all of them. And I'm really, really, really lucky to do that. And then with the Cajun, I'm subbing for Matt Torino, which is very humbling every once in a while when Matt can't do it. And then the mariachi, it's a community band. So I would say there's around 10 or 12 people in there. And for me, the biggest challenge in that is memorizing, because it isn't a folk music. I'm playing the third violin part. And so what I do is I listen to the YouTube video and do karaoke with it. I play along with the YouTube videos. And there's one song, La Bikina, which has like 350 million views on YouTube. And I am personally responsible for 1 million of those views, learning to play my third violin part with that. Those people are extraordinary, because that has, besides Edgar, we have Leo Gomez as a vocalist. Yoretzi is our college student vocalist, who's the most poised 19-year-old I have ever met in my life and has a voice that knocks your socks off. Pete Shungu plays trumpet. Alex Schmer, on and on. It's really a wonderful, wonderful group.
Well, now I have a very different kind of question to ask you. When I talk to artists, I like to ask about your creative life. You're a very busy performing artist and learning music and organizing, doing a tremendous amount. How do you nourish your own creative life in music?
I would say mostly by going to festivals where I'm not in charge and somebody else is teaching me, and I'm the receptor, and I'm surrounded by people who are really good, and listening really a lot. I don't listen to podcasts. I listen to music. I find it very difficult to practice by myself. It's really isolating. If I could wave a magic wand and wish for more artistic fulfillment, it would be for the people that I play with to be slightly less busy so that we could jam together, because for me, it's not a solitary thing. I nourish myself by trying to do this with other people. Yeah, as you probably know, I also try to bring a lot of out-of-town klezmer things here, and that's really rewarding, but it's also quite exhausting. So I really like going to these experiences where I'm not in charge, and I can just soak up what's being given to me. And playing, I think my favorite artistic experience really is to be in the middle of a jam.
Uh-huh. So you're good at loosening up.
Yeah. Well, and you're just surrounded by everybody else. We're doing the same thing. There's another term for klezmer that's very characteristic called heterophony. And this is also true of synagogue music and klezmer music, which is that everyone is playing the same thing, but in slightly different ways at the same time. So it makes somebody, like, it's sort, that is sort of the opposite of mariachi, which requires precision. And everyone, even our bows should be going the same direction. But this heterophony means it's this sort of designed cacophony. And that's what a jam is like. And you're in the middle of all of these sounds coming in and out. For me, that's kind of a heaven. I hear what somebody else is doing, and I try to match them or call in response back to them. And it's just kind of heaven. And you never want to play the tune the same way twice. You always change it up. And that's what those genres are about. Mariachi's good for me. It's good to try to be part of this unified organism where we're all playing everything the same. And that's also where I get lost in the mariachi, is when the singers are singing in harmony, and I'm just dying just watching them, and I just love it so much, and then I forget to come in.
Yeah. So for you, really, the joy of the music is playing together.
I'm not one of those people who would go off on a long hike somewhere and just play in the mountains by myself. I mean, I could do that. I would do that. But for me, the joy is in playing with others. Better than words.
There's something magical about music and about making it together with other people.
Big shout out to the Rose Bowl Tavern for hosting so many types of music and being such risk takers in that regard. We're really, really lucky to have that venue. One thing Rob Crum always says is, what nights does the Rose Bowl have music? Every night. Or what days of the week? Every day. So that we're pretty lucky with that. This community is very good in that regard, and I think if we could all meet on a musical plane, there would be less strife, less difficulty. Yeah, we're lucky to have Krannert, so many other things. And God bless the city of Urbana for letting the Rose Bowl have the parking lot in the summer.
Yes. Well, Frances, that's about the time we have. And I want to thank you so much for sharing this, the background scenes of someone that I see so often out there playing is fascinating. And you are a very generous spirit in this community. You give a great deal. And for that, we are all grateful.
Thank you, Cope. Thank you.
Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Featuring three floors of gently used books, greeting cards, journals, and more. Jane Addams Bookshop at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign, online at janeadamsbooks.com. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org. All episodes of Catch the Beat are archived on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs. You can also listen to live stream and archive shows on the WEFT app, available on your favorite app store. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. See you next time.
Radio station where the mighty host of heaven sing. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio.